Hello, Chelsea fans, and welcome to another edition of the Lad for Matthew Harden podcast. Todd Bowley has been working hard in the recent days to assure Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel an efficient start to the summer transfer window. I'm very excited to answer all the listeners' questions surrounding the newly run CFC with the brilliant Daniel Childs of Football at London, otherwise known as Son of Chelsea on YouTube and socials. Dan, you were one of the first guests on this pod a year and a half ago in the winter of 2020. We sit here today talking about the same roller coaster of a club that is Chelsea. Just a precursor for our listeners, we tried to do this interview about a week and a half ago, and it didn't quite record because there was something wrong with my iPad. And ever since then, it seems like news has been popping out of the woodwork today, with especially Koulibaly. First of all, thanks for hopping on the pod. How's everything with you, mate?
Yeah, it's great to be back on, mate. It's how crazy Chelsea is and how much has changed. I mean, it just speaks consistently to the madness of Chelsea. You don't speak to someone for about 6 months and the whole landscape of our club changes, either in the dugout or in the case of the last year, ownership. And then, you know, now, of course, we've got some big targets about to sign for Chelsea. Raheem Sterling, Koulibaly, these are big moves for big players. And because now we're seeing the players out in the US and of course got some of the games coming up. So I think it's really exciting, and I'm trying to be sort of positive about things. I think I've been quite critical of the club in recent months and kind of skeptical of the transfers and what we're going to do in terms of the business and how important it is that we get that balance right between buying and selling, you know, very much helping the academy players get through. But I think you've got to be optimistic with the level of player we are bringing in, particularly in the first two.
Well, once again, thank you for coming on the podcast, Daniel. And you mentioned just the avenues that Bowley is going to get these businesses done. It seems like he is invested in a meeting with a lot of different clubs and a lot of different agents around the world just to try to form those relationships over these past couple of weeks. So how impressed have you been so far with how commanding he's been going to those extents, trying to compete with the way Manchester City and Liverpool are run?
It was always going to be an intense summer. I don't think that's a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone because Chelsea were behind their rivals because of the sanctions. Chelsea had to get moving quickly on many different departments, buying and selling. And Bowley himself, you know, he's been handed a lot of situations that were out of his control. If we just instantly look at, say the Koulibaly signing, I think preferably you would have wanted to keep Antonio Rudiger as sort of a 29-year-old, and you kept him on for a new contract. But of course, that was out of Bowley's hands. By the time he took over and Clear Lake took over the club, Rudiger was out the door. So he has to work with what he's got. And I think that there was some concern, even from myself, despite my confidence, and I think Todd Bowley and his consortium being the right choice for Chelsea over the takeover process, that he was going to take this interim sporting director role. And, you know, this is someone who hasn't worked in European football before. You know, he's trying to be a sporting director for one of Europe's biggest clubs in a summer that is fraught with danger, basically. But I think from what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing so far, you know, Bowley's being proactive. He has to be. Chelsea have to move quickly, and they are spinning a lot of plates, which is the way it kind of has to be. I don't think future summers, you hope future summers aren't going to be like this, but this is a very unique one for Chelsea. And a lot of the sort of briefing before this summer was about sort of rebuilding the squad. So when you're saying stuff like that, there's obviously a lot of action and surgery that needs to take place. But I think the way, if we look at the two signings, unless something collapses in the closing minutes and seconds for Koulibaly and Raheem Sterling, you know, these are, I think, two opportunistic signings for players coming to the end of their contracts, but still players that could potentially offer a lot very quickly to two key areas of the pitch. And what we also know is to cause influence. I think that's something that cannot be overstated here. You know, any target that Chelsea are going in for seriously this summer has the approval of Thomas Tuchel. And once he doesn't, we will not go in for, as maybe you're going to see with the Ronaldo situation. So in a sense, a lot of the work, it was going to be intense, but you're hearing good things. And listen, I think that some of this is short term, some of this is long term. In the now missing podcast we did, I think something I referred to was that, like, there are short term ambitions and there are long term ambitions, and there are things that we maybe are going to be able to judge Bowley on quite quickly, and other things that you're going to have to wait 18 months or probably even longer to judge him on. But at the moment, it looks optimistic. And on paper, and that's all you can do at the moment because these two players have not kicked a ball for Chelsea, I think they're two very good players. That's what we have in front of us at the moment.
And relating this back to Todd Boyle's situation, you know, of course, he has been under the direction of the Los Angeles Dodgers these past the past decade. And I just want people to know, like, for my foreign listeners outside of the United States, that, like, in free agency, basically, like, the transfer window of professional sports in America, that time is cut down to very, very slim time. There's about 3-4 weeks that people can make business and make moves. But now, you know, he's kind of trying to get used to this 3-month window. And I'm not surprised that a lot of this, these news are coming in flurries, because he's used to that kind of got to get this deal done in A and B time in America. So I'm pretty confident in the fact that, you know, when the nail reads the rubber, like, Bully will get the deal done, because he's used to having his back against the wall in crunch time during free agency over with this team in America. Your point about short-term and long-term ambitions goes really nicely into our first question, which is from RJ. He asks you, what do you think success looks like for the new board over the next two seasons?
So I think season one is just about maintaining Champions League football. I don't think that changes dependent on who we sign for the rest of the window. But even with the positive signings, you know, I think there still is a realism amongst Chelsea fans that the likelihood is we're not going to be in a serious title race. But that doesn't mean we can't have a productive season and can't make improvements on last. You know, I think that there can be a hope, hopefully, like, internally, that we can end with more points, we can be more consistent across the season, hopefully get some big wins. But I think for Bowley, it's just about, and Clearlake, I'm sure it is just about maintaining Chelsea's place, making sure that despite all the chaos, despite all the upheaval, despite the players leaving, like Antonio Rudiger and Christensen and Cesar Azpilicueta potentially as well, you know, some big characters leaving the dressing room, and obviously the hierarchy as well, Bruce Buck, Petr Cech, Marina Granovskaya, big figures leaving, that Chelsea still are a Champions League club, maintaining that place in Europe's top tier, because financially, that's massive. I think by the end of the second year, because I think that's a safer place to put it, I think there will start to be, you'd hope there start to be some developments on Stamford Bridge, because that was such a big part of the takeover, was what's going to happen to Stamford Bridge. And I think commercially, new ownership, particularly American ownership, and Bowley has said this himself when he was asked back in 2019, that I think it was CBS or NBC, I can't remember the exact interview, but he was speaking about Premier League, and I think he was referring mainly to Tottenham's new stadium, because that had recently opened, and he's speaking about how the stadiums are such a great place for, you know, commercial activity, sponsorship, which, I, you know, a lot of Chelsea fans, I'm sure, like match-going fans, football fans, they don't want to hear stuff like that, because it's, you know, it irks against them, but it is important. And, you know, for Chelsea, the revenue at Stamford Bridge, as much as I adore it and love it, brings compared to others, you know, there is an opportunity there. So I think that that's going to be the big thing. And I do wonder, it's, listen, we are so early on, I do think that maybe, I think Roman potentially wanted the stadium to be one of his key lasting legacies at Chelsea. He wasn't able to do that for a variety of reasons. I think maybe Bowley's ownership and Clearlake will look at that as their big thing, if they can move Chelsea into a redeveloped Stamford Bridge. I think there's still massive hurdles, you know, that the sort of hurdles that Chelsea under Abramovich were going through to try and get Stamford Bridge redeveloped. And how was it all going to work? Was Chelsea going to have to move out of Stamford Bridge? I think as recently as April, May, when we were getting reports over the takeover process and who was going to take charge, it was about sort of a stand-by-stand reconstruction. Listen, I'm not an expert on that. I think it's just wait and see, but I'd like to guess at this point that we will hear something on that in the coming years, because I think that is something financially and commercially that the club will want to do. I think that Bowley will look at Spurs, he'll look at Arsenal, he'll look at Chelsea currently and say, listen, we've just got Raheem Sterling and Koulibaly, like, you know, we're quite clearly a European elite club. Now let's get a stadium that makes us an even bigger European elite club. So I think that would be more of a long-term ambition. I'm not saying in 2 years the stadium is going to be done. I think just in terms of plans, more sort of on paper, things being put out there in terms of the new Stamford Bridge.
I think expectations is a good word that RJ uses, because I think we have to be realistic in the fact that we have finished off the Premier League champions an average of 20 points over these past five seasons. So if we can stay, I think stability is a key word as well. Keep this club stable as best as to their abilities and kind of move forward and continue to challenge and close that gap to Liverpool and Manchester City. But it's interesting you bring up the stadium point, because there's a lot of commercial revenue nowadays from American sports teams going over to London actually and playing games there. You've seen the NFL come to Tottenham Stadium. I'm not sure if they've gone to any other stadium in the past couple of years, but they've played a lot of games. I think they played a game at Wembley. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, Bowley has those kind of connections to American sports, where you might be seeing some different organizations coming to play games at Stamford Bridge in these next 5 years. That should be interesting to see. Getting into RJ's second question, the players, and this is kind of nice because it's relevant right now, as preseason's about to get started. The players that you're most excited about to see in preseason to impress Tuchel, but also hopefully, you know, be invigorated into the squad this season.
The one that comes to mind instantly is Conor Gallagher. I think mainly because Gallagher, I think, has the greatest chance, you know, percentage wise, of any of the returning loanees to really make an impact. I just think tactically it's very interesting to see how Tuchel uses Gallagher, because Tuchel has referred to this before and he spoke about it during last season, sort of the intensity that he wants to see Chelsea play at for a larger period of time, and for a variety of reasons, maybe injury, maybe profile of player, maybe whatever it is, you know, drops in performances. He's not been able to sort of maintain intensity throughout the periods of games. And with five subs coming in and with Gallagher in there, who I think is such a good talent and adds exactly this type of skills, particularly pressing. I mean, that's something when you watch Gallagher, he's an all-action player. It's very hard to miss what he does on a football pitch. And I think that he can develop even further, and particularly maybe a goal threat from central midfield, which Chelsea have not had arguably since Lampard, basically. You know, we haven't had one. I mean, if you can classify Mason as that player, right? You know, if you classify him as a midfielder, then you'd say that. But Mason, mainly under Thomas Tuchel, has been playing as an inside forward. He hasn't been playing as a central midfielder. So I think him, I think Trevor Chalobah is another one, because he was one that broke through last year. And I think it was forgotten how big a season he had and how impressive he was, considering where we were 12 months ago. And some of the big performances, I thought he was harshly done by to not play more in that closing period of the season when Chelsea were really making mistakes at the back, and Chalobah for some reason was out of the team. So I think he can develop. He's even been said he's open to playing on the left of defence as well. So you potentially see maybe a change in position for him over the course of the season to try and vary out that skill set and what he can do under Tuchel. And yeah, let's go for one of the new signings. I think mainly I'm going to say Raheem Sterling, because I've just been such a fan of Sterling throughout his career. And I think that this is such a big move personally for him. It does have shades. I've said this elsewhere. I think it does have shades of Cesc Fabregas signing for Chelsea. It was exactly the same age, 27. A player who has already established themselves as a great talent and someone who can be a very influential figure in their team, but maybe just has that motivation to go again. And maybe there are things that have annoyed him that has, you know, I think Mourinho latched on to, I think, some of Fabregas's frustration of how it went wrong at Barca. And I think that very much centered into what he did at Chelsea in that first season. I think with Sterling, he has such a great opportunity to be a leader. I think an inspiration, considering how frustrating our attack has been. There kind of is that gap and hole for anyone to walk in and take it by the throat, basically, and start influencing things. And Sterling, coming from Man City, has that opportunity. And again, tactically, you've got someone who I think ticks more boxes than he doesn't. And I think it's very difficult to argue against his goals, you know, his productivity. This is a guy who dwarfs all of our attacking numbers over the 5 years. I mean, I was just doing sort of a comparison of the last five seasons. Every single, so I matched it with Premier League goals, our Premier League top goal scorer for that season, and also just in all comps. And in every single season, Sterling was better in both aspects. Sometimes it was closer than not, but I mean, that kind of speaks to Chelsea's attacking problems since Costa has left, but it also speaks to an incredibly productive wide player. And I just am excited to see. It's a bit surreal, I think, seeing Sterling in a Chelsea shirt, to be honest, because seeing how he developed through Liverpool, but particularly how inspirational he was for England at the Euros, which I think is maybe the best case study you have of his talent really in recent years is when he's outside that City bubble, because that's such a big accusation that, you know, without Pep Guardiola, he can't do what he does. And I think at the Euros, you very much saw what he can do. So I'm excited to see what he does at Chelsea and how he influences the rest of Chelsea's attack.
Getting back to your Conor Gallagher point, I'm so excited to watch this guy in Chelsea blue, because, you know, people will talk about someone like Jude Bellingham as a potential target coming in, you know, in these next couple years. We have our Jude Bellingham and Conor Gallagher pressing. You talked about progressive passing, touches inside the 6-yard box. Like, he ranks in the upper 90 percentiles against all midfielders in Europe. And he's only, what, 22 years old. So, yeah, I mean, I'm super excited, especially after the season he had last year. He proved himself in the Premier League against the best in the toughest league in the midfield. And I'm really excited, especially to see how he pairs up with someone like Jorginho and Mateo Kovacic in a potential pivot, especially if we do move to that back four. We'll see what goes there. But getting to our next question, Daniel, Jay, our good friend, he's asking about your ideal formation for next year, which I'm pretty sure I know your answer, and then also a dream starting lineup for next season.
I think the last time we recorded this, De Ligt was kind of the big centre-back target, wasn't he? So now he's kind of gone out the window. I'm going, the dream scenario on the opening day of the season. 4-3-3 is sort of the formation I'd like to see Tuchel move to. But speaking to people, you know, it's quite clear, and Tuchel said as much in one of his early interviews as Chelsea coach. You know, he spoke about the ability to kind of live the formation, and kind of, it doesn't really matter what setup there is. There's these underlying principles that you stick with, no matter whether it's a three at the back or four at the back, you know, whatever the configuration is. But I like 4-3-3 because I just think it sends a signal, and we've already seen reports that Tuchel is open to changing. That's why he's recruiting certain players. And I just think Chelsea need to take more risks and really go for it a lot more this season if they want to improve. So 4-3-3, Mendy in goal, Reece James right back. Let's go. If you're going for a back two, I think that it's quite clear that I think a lot of people would say Thiago Silva and Koulibaly, but, you know, there is scope to change that and evolve that over the next couple of seasons, where a Chalobah comes in, potentially a Colwell comes in. Nathan Ake is a name that I don't think we mentioned last time because, you know, he's another one, but let's go for that too, because it's kind of a blockbuster back two. And I think you'd want to see them two play together at some point, which is what they're going to do. And it's two of Europe's best defenders over the past decade playing together, and hopefully it has the desired effect. Ben Chilwell at left back, Declan Rice in central midfield. In front of him, I'm probably going to go... It's tough because I can't remember if I put Kante in the team last time. I probably still will with Mason Mount alongside him. But, you know, Kovacic played so well, and Kante still has concerns, isn't there, about him and his fitness. But I think one of Kante, Kovacic, and then you have Mount and Gallagher kind of deputizing who plays on the other side of a midfield three for me. You know, so many options, and even Ruben coming back. But let's say Kante and Mount for the sake of it. Raheem Sterling, Kai Havertz. Dream is Serge Gnabry, because that's another name that's come up recently. I love Serge Gnabry as a player, I really do. But if not, I'd like to see Callum Hudson-Odoi given a serious chance this season to finally understand what Callum is as a player. It's something that Adam Newson brings up a lot. You know, just this constant dull conversation we've had about Callum at this limbo state we've been in with Hudson-Odoi for so long. So I'd say Callum having some part in this attack this season would really excite me in a really serious way. So just to run through it again, because I was a little bit confused in there. Mendy, James, Silva, Koulibaly, Chilwell, Rice, Mount, Kante, Hudson-Odoi, Havertz and Sterling.
And mine's pretty similar. I'm going to kind of take this from more of a realistic point of things, especially with the Declan Rice. I mean, I can only dream, and that's what Jay's question's asking for, you know, dream starting lineup. But just to give this a little bit of a turn, I'm going to be a little bit more realistic with mine, and kind of, I would love to put Declan Rice in my team, but I haven't. I've gone for a 4-2-3-1. Mendy in goal, James at right back, Silva and Koulibaly in the back, Chilwell, Jorginho and Kovacic as the midfield pivot, Mount at center attacking midfield, Sterling on the right, Hudson-Odoi on the left, and Havertz up top. I think it'll be really interesting to see where Thomas Tuchel does end up playing Raheem Sterling, because he is very good on the left. He's also very good on the right. We've seen him perform at both of those positions, for England, for Manchester City, even, you know, the occasional cup game we could see him playing as a false nine. I wouldn't be surprised. So I'm really excited to see Raheem Sterling in that attack, because I think he's going to really thrive with Kai Havertz, especially. I think their fluid movement with him going into the middle, Kai kind of flying out to the left or to the right, and his kind of, him kind of filling in that position, I think it's going to be really excited to see. But yeah, I think the first lineup against first game's against Everton, right, away. So it'll be interesting to see what that lineup looks like come what it would be in the second week of August. So time is ticking, you know, preseason's coming to a beginning, and I'm really excited to see this team. But like that I said, Connor Gallagher.
On the case of signing Rice, if you sign Rice, you know, I think Kovacic, because I think Kovacic had, maybe it's been forgotten, I think he had quite a good season last time out, and I think he developed as a player. And, you know, he's another one now. He's, 27, I think? You know, he's coming into his prime as well. So you've got quite a few players there in the sense of Kovacic. If he can just continue to stay at the same level, I think it said so much that in that FA Cup final, where I was sort of doubting about Kante, was if you flash back to that FA Cup final in May, the idea that if it was between Kante and Kovacic, two doubted players who would start a major final for Chelsea, for Tuchel against Liverpool, that it would be Kovacic with a swollen ankle over Kante. If you would have said that in 2021, not many people would have believed you. Because Kovacic was firmly the third place midfielder. He was, you know, he was the rotational guy. He wasn't first choice. It was Jorginho and Kante. So it kind of speaks to the concerns we've had over N'Golo Kante and how he's going to look, because obviously he's not out there in the US, which is really frustrating. So Kovacic, I think, again, kind of needs to take a bit of a, maybe a senior role in the coming year as well. Because I think both Jorginho and Kante, we're still kind of up in the air out there. Long-term future is going to lie at Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see Mateo Kovacic continue to develop, hopefully continue to improve his game inside the six-yard area, score those goals from midfield like we did see him, a little bit of a glimpse of it against Aston Villa where he pressed and he kind of scored a goal, similar to Mason Mount's first goal actually against Leicester City a couple years back. But get into our next question, Daniel. Another Dan Hill, he's asking, you know, Billy Gilmore, he's a name that's really fun under the radar recently, and it's another person I'm really excited to see in preseason. And comparing the two of Billy Gilmore and Ethan Ampadu, to keep, to loan, or to sell Ethan Ampadu and Billy Gilmore?
This is a difficult one. I think Ethan Ampadu could be quite an interesting player for Tuchel this year, purely on the basis that he's quite versatile. And if you speak to people who watched a lot of him at Venezia last year, played a lot of different positions. I mean, I think with the exception of playing in goal and playing up front for them, he pretty much played everywhere for Venezia. And I mean, maybe Billy's going through this with his loans now, and we don't know how the situation is going to play out for him in the coming years. But, you know, Ethan Ampadu, I think a lot of us have kind of framed recent loans as kind of negative for him. And they're like, these have not been great loans. They haven't worked out for him as a player. He hasn't played enough, or he's had to experience some really difficult years, you know, back-to-back relegations in two different leagues. But then you flip it and say, culturally, as a young player, he has gained so much experience in Germany under Julian Nagelsmann at Leipzig. Although he didn't play a lot, he did play a massive Champions League game against Spurs. So he learns that league, then he comes back for Sheffield United. It's a difficult league, but, you know, for a young player, I think that adversity is important, and he gains a lot of minutes. I mean, it's a stat I've found quite interesting recently, is that since the start of the 2020-21 season, Ethan Ampadu has more Premier League appearances than Nathan Ake. which kind of speaks to both players and the fact that, you know, Ampadu was out in Italy for one of those seasons. So so he got a lot of experience there, and then of course went to Venezia. You know, it wasn't the most fashionable loan. It wasn't a loan that you felt like was going to put him sort of front and center, another team that was struggling at the bottom of the of their league. But, you know, he comes back an experienced player. He's still playing on a regular basis for his nation. He's going to go to the World Cup. And again, looking at that expected Chelsea, I definitely suggest go and follow expected Chelsea and look out for some of his tweets and dig out some of his tweets about Ampadu, because he sort of compared the numbers of Ampadu in last season when he was playing as a defensive midfielder to Aurelien Tchouameni in the 2020-21 season before that summer when Chelsea were kind of interested. And they aren't that apart, you know. So if Chelsea don't sign a central midfielder this summer, Ampadu could become that player. But I think Ampadu is not going to be another loan. I think if Chelsea do make a decision on him, I think they're going to have to sell him, because I think Ampadu will want minutes, particularly as a player who's going to want to go to the World Cup with his nation. Gilmore, I'm going to say a loan. I just think that it's challenging, though, because I think Chelsea, you've brought this up, that with the contract situation, which was kind of extended a little bit, but it wasn't a new contract. If he goes to, say, let's just say, because it's the most obvious one I could bring up, he goes to Goodison Park, he plays with in Frank Lampard's midfield for a year, because you know Frank will make him a key part of his central midfield, and he has a really good season. And then you're into next summer where he's down to 1 year, and negotiating wise, Chelsea are not in the strongest position if a team comes in and throws out a lot of money for Billy Gilmore. So it's a delicate balancing act. But I would still say maybe a loan, but are you going to loan Billy and you're going to negotiate a new contract with him after extending just recently? That's, you know, that's not going to happen. So it's a weird one. I'd like to see one of the two stay. I would, based on what we have at the current point. So I'm going to go with Ampadu, because I think Ampadu maybe is a little bit more ready for first team action, and maybe he's a little bit more versatile. But I like both, and it's a shame with Billy, because we were also excited about him, and maybe have forgotten how good he was under Thomas Tuchel. Sorry, that's not a definitive answer, because I think both could have very good trajectories for Chelsea. But I'd be amazed if in 12 months' time both are still Chelsea players, or both are really like in the mix for first team football, because there's so many players they're competing against, and I think their own priorities will sort of take, will sort of become more important over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I think it's, and that's why I'm excited that Dan kind of put these two players together, Dan Hill, that is, that, you know, it's almost like a Ricochet situation. Like, I think one of these players has to kind of leave and one of them has to stay, especially because we still have the likes of Jorginho, we still have the likes of N'Golo Kante at this club. There's not a lot of room for central midfield, as much as we'd like to sign a new player. You know, we have these talents as Ethan Ampadu and as Billy Gilmore. Ampadu reminds me a lot of a player like Calvin Phillips, where he is great in the box, blocking shots, clearances wise, he's amazing as well. Tackles wise, interception wise, he can improve with his passing, especially. That's probably a weak part of his game. But if you want him to be a player who can step in the Premier League and play, you know, 1,800 minutes, say, I think he can do the job. I think he can do that job for you. And I'm really excited to see where Ampadu plays, because we haven't seen him such a long time in a Chelsea shirt. What has it been, 3 or 4 seasons since he last played in blue? So, yeah, I'm excited to see Ampadu, but keep an eye on Gilmore as well, because like you said, the contract situation is interesting. We hope we can get that done soon. We signed him to what, like a 1 year extension or whatever. We triggered that lever a couple weeks ago, but yeah, it didn't really secure his future either, whatever way. But getting into this next question, Daniel, and it's our last question from Legend MA. I think it's really a fitting question to end on. Because we talked about a lot of positives with someone like Sterling coming in, and potentially a guy like Serge Gnabry as well, you know, another Thomas Tuchel target. Do you think that this season was so much top and change at Chelsea? And it'll be interesting to see what Bully has to say on this as well, and what his philosophy would be if the club, you know, doesn't have the best season next year. Do you think that it is make or break for Tuchel this season in regards to getting the best out of his attackers, especially if and when he gets the sign he wants, i.e., Sterling plus one?
My answer to last time, I think, when I answer this question is not going to be too drastically different despite Sterling's arrival. I think Tuchel is under more scrutiny this season, I think in a variety of ways, but particularly because of the attack, because it's the one area of Chelsea's squad he has not been able to improve. I think you can make a very legitimate argument that Chelsea's attack has gone backwards in the main. You know, and that sounds brutal because we've won a Champions League and we've secured our highest points tally since the last title win under him. But I think that generally the attack has looked so confused, uncertain. I think some of the decisions that Tuchel has made so far, he kind of has to get it right this season. And the two players I'm going to reference, I think, will annoy people, but I think it's amounting evidence against Tuchel if he can't resolve it, which I think we all dream he can with some of the players he's bringing in. And hopefully the likes of Havertz start to improve and Mount continues to improve as a player, and maybe Hudson-Odoi steps up, you know, whatever it is, Pulisic, you know, if he sticks around. But, you know, the way he dispensed of Tammy Abraham very quickly is still very puzzling to me. The Lukaku situation, which of course is not his... is not all on Tuchel, but it's also not only on Lukaku. There is a nuance there. I think a lot of people would sort of frame it very much lopsided to Lukaku, which I completely understand, given culturally the fit, given how he went out, you know, behind a closed back basically to do an interview that caused a lot of controversy. But at the same time, I think that there is going to be a lot of concern over the coming season if Tuchel does not find a productive attack. A pattern starts to emerge, doesn't it, that you're bringing in all these players who've proved themselves elsewhere, or maybe, as in the case of Tammy, was growing as a player, and you're dispensing with them, or you're not finding solutions to them. And the argument of, well, our attackers are just all so bad, you know, just I don't think rings true. I don't think it does. And I said this in a recent article I wrote, where you look back to Frank Lampard's first season with no signings. I think that's the highest XG we've had at Stamford Bridge since, I think, even before, it was more than the title winning season under Conte. And you know, that's a season again where we didn't sign any players. You could argue Willian had his best year. Pulisic had that electric lockdown run. I think the problem is tactically, and just the way Tuchel's approached things, and I can understand in a variety of ways why he's done the things he's done with certain players to protect certain players, is we've gone from kind of the chaos of Lampard, the ultra chaos of Lampard, to like ultra control under Tuchel. And it's kind of like this pendulum has swung. And I think under Lampard, our balance problem was in midfield. I think the balance problem has now swung to the attack. Because we've got more control, more balance, and we're defensively more stable, it's hurt the attacking players. And you've seen the limitations in that in the long term when you just look at the league rather than just looking at one-off games. And I think that it's a general consensus thing where you'll hear a lot of people, Chelsea fans, but also outside of Chelsea, say Chelsea's problem isn't creating chances, it's you know, finishing them. And I kind of, you know, unfortunately, the underlying stats just don't tell me that. They don't indicate a highly creative team. We don't create a lot of high quality opportunities. I think when people talk about that, they refer to these massive games where we've missed chances against the likes of Liverpool and against the likes of Real Madrid last season, where those teams are elite opposition. So they come onto you, they press Chelsea. Chelsea under Tuchel were very good in those games because teams allow us to pass round them. You know, Chelsea are very good passing out of a press. But in those situations, which is the majority of games where a team is inferior to Chelsea and they aren't just going to press you intensely unless they're Southampton, a lot of the mid to lower table teams in the Premier League are more content to sit back. So you have to break them down. And I still think that Tuchel has, particularly once Chilwell and James went down injured, it looked like we lost a lot of ideas over how we were going to do that. And you're kind of hoping in the current system, again, that with Sterling now being involved as well, and maybe some others, that Chilwell and James continue that incredible level of productivity that they've shown. I mean, I think they showed it because they're really good players, but you can't expect them to be on that level for a whole season. There's got to be other players to step up. And I just think that Tuchel himself needs to evolve the team and needs to prove with new players coming in that the limitations were maybe out of his control in a sense, where it's like, I'm just working with what I've been given. Once I start to mold this squad, you will see that I will go in a more progressive direction. But I guess 22, 23 is going to be a great indicator of whether is this just the style of Thomas Tuchel. He is a very controlling coach, and he's one of these coaches that maybe is too controlling for his own good at times, where you need a little bit of that chaos. You need a little bit of that maverick in your attack. You need someone who's just going to be allowed to be let loose a bit. And I think there are a few players in this attack, like Hakim Ziyech, who's on the move. You know, if you're going to move to a back four, I think it's a fair point someone could bring up where you go, well, why don't we just keep Ziyech? Because he was working in a back four before Tuchel arrived, and arguably at points last season when Tuchel moved to that system. So big questions. And listen, I'm not sitting here and going, it's make or break sounds dramatic, right? Because if Chelsea's attack doesn't drastically improve, but we still have an all right season, I don't think many people are going to be coming for him, to be honest. I don't, you know, I think that'd be unfair. If we win a couple of domestic trophies, it, you know, makes people, if we won those two penalty shootouts against Liverpool. But I think that there is quite clearly a shortcoming that I think a lot of us have seen in the attack that needs to be addressed and can't just be, I don't think it can just be excused away by bad players, because I think that's too simplistic an explanation.
Well, I think it's brilliant as you brought up the fact that, you know, we have had such a switch in the pendulum, you know, from manager to manager these past, even, you know, going back from Conte to Sarri to Lampard, you know, like those are three drastically different types of managers, especially in their attacking philosophies. And like this season, I think will be the one, and like you mentioned, is this Thomas Tuchel style, or is he trying to mold this new, you know, new power, so it might say, this new monster of an attack? So I think it was a good way to end this podcast. It was a great question. Make or break, like you said. We'll see what Todd Bowley's thoughts are on Thomas Tuchel's performance and what his expectations and what his standards are, you know, this season, coming in as the sporting director, at least for now, and as the new owner of Chelsea Football Club. A lot of things to look forward to in preseason. You know, Chelsea are over here in the States, which is really cool for me. I'm trying to go see one of their games in Las Vegas pretty soon, because I'm going to be over in Phoenix in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, it's just really cool to have Chelsea in America. I'm looking forward to them playing their preseason. I'm looking forward to them bringing in players like Sterling Koulibaly, who, from reports of what we're recording, are going to be you know, arriving in Los Angeles in the next, you know, couple of hours. So super pumped. Daniel, thank you for coming on the podcast once again. After we had that little blip a couple weeks ago, I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun today. Where can my listeners find your content?
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I'll probably say just the best place is at Son of Chelsea on Twitter for my thoughts. And that's where I share a lot of my articles for Football London and also my videos on YouTube. But you can go over to YouTube, Son of Chelsea, where I'm posting regular content about the club. And as well, again, you will also find this on, you know, the pinned tweet on my account on Twitter. I've recently started a Substack, a newsletter I'm going to be posting to regularly, and I think a lot of the things we discussed in terms of Tuchel and the attack is kind of I break down in my first article, but that'll probably be a weekly thing as well that I'm going to be bringing out. So yeah, I'd say Son of Chelsea is kind of on Twitter is the hub of kind of all my content and thoughts on the club.
Well, I implore you guys all to go and check out Daniel's content, but also that first Substack Out article, because it was worth the read, because he did a really nice job articulating his words in that. And I really appreciate him starting that up. And I'm really excited to see what he's going to do in these next couple of weeks and this upcoming season for Football.London and all of his other content. So make sure to go follow Daniel if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter at StatmanChain and on Instagram at StatmanChain as well. We're really trying to grow that Instagram platform this season. I'm going to start doing a lot of different graphic designs with using a lot of statistics, but also, you know, videos from and little clips from our podcast, so we can get those teasers out back and going before I start up the craziness of high school again in the fall. So we're looking forward to this preseason. Thank you once again, Dana, for coming on the podcast today. See you soon, Chelsea fans.